Okay, let us begin speaking. Notice, by the way, that I've passed out two sheets. One is a map of the class, of the path of Sri Rupa in this chapter and what we're going to cover. And we're not exactly on schedule, but we'll see how we do today. But the path is still the same. Is there a sheet I could have of that so I can just make a comment? And the other sheet is part of a lecture of Srila Prabhupada's. Very interesting, from Mayapur, 1976. Such wonderful lectures Prabhupada gave in Mayapur, 1976. So powerful. No need to look at these much right now. But about the map, let's just catch up to where we are. We began with the Mangal Archan, reading that, those words of Krishnadas Kaviraj, Goswami Maharaj, which set an auspicious atmosphere. And then the first principle that was spoken of when Sivananda Sen and all the devotees were coming to Puri to see Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was that if somehow or another we attract the favorable attention of an exalted Vaishnava, and he accepts us, how fortunate we are. And despite our flea-ridden consciousness, despite the fact that we may have very few good qualities, still we will get the result if we get the mercy and the acceptance of a Vaishnava. Then Rupa Goswami got some instructions. He came and he wanted to write one drama, and then he got an order from Satyabhama in Satyabhama Purnya Katak that it should be two dramas, and then that was later confirmed by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Then Haridas and Rupa, Srila Rupa Goswami and Srila Haridas Thakur, were staying together, and we heard just after the Gundicha temple cleansing that they wouldn't take prasadam with the other devotees, and Mahaprabhu himself came and fed them through Govinda Dware, through Govinda. He gave them the remnants of his own food because he was their master. He did not neglect them. They were so humble and felt themselves so unqualified, yet they did such powerful service. Powerful service. Unimitable service. So their humility didn't stop them from doing that powerful service, but they did that service from the point of humility, which gave them the empowerment to do that service. So does anyone remember the word that Thakur Haridas used to describe himself, the Bengali word? Char. Char. Abominable, most unfortunate, ill-starred, unlucky, ashes, burnt, having no value, practically speaking. He actually somehow, inconceivably, felt himself like that. But because he was in the shelter of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he had accepted Gotripte Varanam Tata. He had accepted the shelter of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu naturally accepted him. Then he was so powerful. But yet, inconceivably, and this is the consciousness of purity, is one perceives impurity where there is none, despite possessing all good qualities. So this is wonderful consciousness. And we read from Brihad Bhagavatamrita how humility is equated, dhainya, utter spiritual humility is equated with prema. And the more deeply one is humble, the more high one's capacity is for prema. And therefore the most humble are the Brajavasis who are fully given to Krishna. And by giving ourselves fully to Krishna, that is Saranagati, that gives us the mentality of belonging. We are not anatta. Anatta means without a lord or master, and it means an orphan. We finally belong to Krishna. We are part of Krishna's family. This is the result of Saranagati. So, then, as we are hearing about this path that is described in as Rupa Goswami meets the Lord, then a verse, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came and Rupa Goswami recited, or rather at the Rath Yatra, described how that verse that Mahaprabhu had spoken of, which revealed his own heart, which is the goal of the path, to serve, basically to serve Radha and Krishna in Sri Vrindavan Dham in a most wonderful way, as Gopi Bharata Parakamalaya, Dasa Dasana Das is the servant of the servant. So Rupa Goswami, because of his the easiest way for me to describe it is because of the sympathetic vibration, because his heart was exactly the same as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's heart, he was able to understand Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's heart. And therefore he could write the verse beginning Priyosime, San Sri Kuru Chetra Militas, how Radharani is saying that now I am meeting you, my dear Krishna, my dear friend, in Kurukshetra, but there is something not exactly the same. This is separation, feeling separate while still meeting. The love was so intense. So Vrindavan is the most intense of all sweetness. But it is not just constant intensity. It is just different varieties of sweetness. And therefore Srila Rupa Goswami later, when he writes Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, he will talk about Bhakti Rasa, or one's sweet, relishing the sweet taste with Krishna, as an ocean, not a lake that may be very, very flat and without any movement in it. But it is an ocean with different kinds of waves and small vyavachari waves based on stai bhav, or one's relationship with Krishna. And then when sattvika bhavs, or intense ecstasies, come through, it is like a tidal wave. And we see this in when we read Chaitanya Charitamrita. We see and hear about Chaitanya Mahaprabhu experiencing from the inside such ecstatic separation from Krishna, such ecstatic emotions, purely on the spiritual platform, that he's annihilated. And the limbs of his body become elongated. And there are, as we mentioned previously, 6 inches, or I don't know how many centimeters that is, but about this much in between the limbs of his body, the joints of his body. What type of emotions are going on internally to cause those type of external manifestations? And tears are coming from his eyes, not just dropping, but shot as if they were from syringes at Rath Yatra. And he'd laugh. And Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, in his commentary on that verse, Evam Vratasa Priyanama Kirtya Jatano Raga Jutta Chitta Uchai, where Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says that his Guru Maharaj, Sripada Ishwara Puri, says that this verse is the essence of Srimad Bhagavatam. And what does it do? It describes the ecstasy that comes to someone who's advanced while they chant Krishna's names, the names of one's dearest one, where one is actually, by the chanting of Krishna's names, in touch with Krishna and one sees Krishna and therefore laughs uncontrollably, sees some pastime of Krishna, Krishna doing something very, very tricky or naughty, and then Krishna disappears, and then crying comes to the heart. Such intense emotion, ecstasy, because it's in relationship with Krishna based on love. And when there's no sthayi bhav, when there's no relationship, then everything, our exposure to these things turns out very neutral to us. Just like when, if someone else's car gets hit by a car, we may be a little sympathetic, but we don't feel the pain of it like the person whose car gets hit. He jumps out of the car and says, "You hit me!" Of course it didn't hit him. It hit his car. But because of the relationship of "this is mine," he invests his sense of self into the car. This is my car. It's not a car. It's my car. Therefore, he experiences emotion when the car gets a scratch on it or bumped because of the sambandha, the relationship. So when one has the sthayi bhav or is established on the spiritual level consciously with Krishna, that is the basis of rasa. That is the platform of bhava bhakti. That is the basis of rasa, to experience the most intense spiritual emotions. And again, when it's somebody else's car and it gets hit, we don't feel anything because there's no, it's not my car, there's no sense of self being invested in it. So Mahaprabhu and the residents of Vrindavan and the great devotees, there is no, they have no definition of themselves as separate from Krishna. I am Krishna's. Krishna is mine. Not I am my body and everything I can get my hands on is mine. But I am Krishna's. And this begins with this stage of Sharanagati or surrender, where we start fully identifying ourselves, and this is basically what Sharanagati means, as Krishna's. I am the servant of Krishna's servants. That is what it means to become the dog of a Vaishnava, is one self-identification changes from this illusory situation where I'm imagining that I'm existing by the power of Maya, imagining I'm existing independently of Krishna. So we turn to Krishna and become Samukha and see that we are in relation, we can't conceive of ourselves in anything other than being a servant of Krishna. Even understanding Aham Brahmasmi, I am spiritual, I am eternal, is incomplete. Because I'm eternally what? Yeah, Jivar Nityadas, Krishner, the servant of Krishna, eternally, it's unavoidable. So when we turn and face that relationship and with great love, understanding who Krishna is, give ourselves to him through serving, through surrender to Guru and Vaishnavas, then our self, sense of self of who we are changes, our identity. And then at that point we can start really moving forward in towards who we are. The sambandha gyan of who we are can truly awaken in what is our specific service. But first we have to understand I'm servant of Krishna. This is who I am. I'm not the master of this world. So how to progress on this path? Then what naturally comes up to get to the path of serving the heart of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, which is Braja, this is what's going on in the heart of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. The prime element of that path is was came from the second verse of Rupa Goswami, Tunde Tundavali, about the holy name, acting on the level of Sudanama, Prema, acting completely independently, the name Krishna acting itself in one's consciousness and dancing within the courtyard of one's heart and causing ecstasy. And Rupa Goswami described that so wonderfully, and Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur expanded that mood in even a still more wonderful way. Millions of hearts and millions of ears and millions of bodies and millions of tongues, but all of them were completely in relationship with Krishna in service, loving service, devotional service. So the first part of the means, of the prime methodology of chanting Krishna's holy names, Kalo Nasteva 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 Gatiriyata, that was given. And we heard how Srila Sridhar Swami and Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur and Prabhupada put it in his verse, that this causes the chanting of Krishna's names, even if we don't chant perfectly or so properly, it causes Krishna to his attention to come to the devotee. Oh, my devotee is thinking of me. My devotee is chanting my names. It is my duty to protect him. And Prabhupada put that in the translation of that sixth canto verse. It is my duty to protect him. Krishna accepts us. That is so wonderful. So here the path is being delineated. So what happens next? Chaitanya Mahaprabhu left, and we started. What happens next? On the next day, this is text 104 in this first chapter, and it is another short section, but very deep in its meaning. Please listen carefully. On the next day, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu left because he was coming and going every day. He did not neglect Rupin Haridas. On the next day, after visiting the temple of Jagannath as usual, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu met Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, who was the Rajki Pandit. He was the king's advisor, Brahminical advisor, due to his great knowledge. Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, for your information, was a historical figure who is mentioned in the histories of India. He studied logic, Navanyaya, in Mathila, and this one place was the center of learning of this Navanyaya. And he studied it, and they didn't want any competition, so they would not allow any printing of the textbook or copying of the textbook. And Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya memorized it and left and went to Nabadweep and started his own school. And Nabadweep became the center of Navanyaya after that, very famous for that. And then later on, Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, who was very, very powerful, powerful pundit, scholar, he went to Jagannath Puri and became the personal advisor, Brahminical advisor of the king. And then he was an impersonalist, disguised as an impersonalist, basically waiting for Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to come. And then it's described in Chaitanya Charitamrita earlier how he was, we can say, converted by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, by his incredible genius and potency. Even though he was a young boy, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was 24 years old, and Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya was elderly. So Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, being a great devotee by this time of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, came with Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, along with Ramananda Roy, who was the governor, previously the governor of Bangalore on behalf of down south, not Bangalore, but Visakhapatnam area in AP. And he was such a devotee, and he was such an author, poet. So this powerful scholar and this great devotee poet who published and wrote and published the Jagannath Ballava Natak, this drama about Lord Jagannath. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu met Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya and Ramananda Roy and Sarup Damodar. They all went together to see Srila Rupa Goswami. And on the way, the Lord greatly praised the qualities of Rupa Goswami. Very simple. When Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu recited the two important verses that Priyosime and Tunde Tindavali, the heart of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu verse and the glorification of the holy name, he recited those verses to them. He told the great scholar and the poet, Rupa Goswami is so great. Listen to the incredibly powerful, beautiful, intimate, well-constructed verses that Rupa Goswami has described. And he felt great pleasure. Mahaprabhu was so happy to say these verses. And thus, as if he had five mouths, he was speaking the glories of Rupa Goswami. He began to praise his devotee, Rupa Goswami. He's such a great author. He's so intimate. He's just praising him and glorifying him. And then text 106 says something very interesting. Sarvabhauma Ramanande Pariksha Karite. What does that Pariksha mean? That Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was praising them, Rupa, and examining them. Pariksha Karite means he was examining them. He was testing them. Si Rupera Guna Duhare Lagilo Kahita. He was explaining the qualities again and again in a glorious way of Rupa Goswami before these two great, powerful intellectuals. Just to examine them. Now, what was he examining them for? What do you think? They were powerful scholars. They were so intimate with Mahaprabhu. He was praising Rupa and glorifying his literary accomplishments. If someone, say you have a quality that's your favorite quality and you're somewhat quite proud of it, and then the person who you hold most dear praises someone else 100 times, 1,000 times more than he's ever said anything good about your specially good quality, what may arise within our heart? Envy. Everyone knows some envy may be there. And this, just to praise Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, the Lord began just to examine Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, and these were exalted devotees. The Lord began to praise the transcendental qualities of Srila Rupa Goswami before them. He was seeing if they had any envy in their hearts. Because before one can progress on the path of bhakti to Goloka Vrindavan, to engage in the service of Sri Sri Radha and Krishna, there cannot be any envy within the heart. Because if we're envious of someone, someone can speak better than I speak. And I'm very proud, oh, I'm going to give these classes or whatever. And someone, then if I'm envious of someone in this world, how envious am I going to be of Krishna or Srimati Radharani? This is the essential qualification. And on the other side, the prime obstacle on the path of Sri Rupa to Goloka Vrindavan. Humility and surrender, we heard, are essential. We heard how chanting the holy names is the prime path. And now we're hearing that before we can enter deeply in the path, we will be examined for our envy, because we cannot enter with envy. How does envy come to the soul? We could say that we are here in the material world because of our envy. Envy of Krishna, turning our back on Krishna. Krishna bhule se jeev. This is an understandable point, actually. And this question has been asked and asked and asked, and there's no truly, fully satisfactory, intellectually satisfactory answer to it. How could we be in this material world? How did we fall from the spiritual world? Or have we eternally been here? If we're eternally been here, then we have a problem, because who made us eternally be here? Who's done this to me? And if we say that, oh, we fell from the spiritual world, we have a problem, because if we're with Krishna, how could we fall? Prabhupada always, when he was asked that question, because there's no Maya in the spiritual world, how could we fall? Prabhupada would answer this, always a chance because of our free will. But why, in any case, why would a soul who is part of Krishna misuse his free will? There has to be some choice, some enmity of some sort, something that makes us bhule se jeev, turn our back on Krishna and forget him, atta eva maya tari, and therefore come into the material world. And when we come into the material world, regardless of exactly how we got here, the prime basis of the material world is explained by Kapila Muni and throughout the third canto of the Bhagavatam, basically, in the three or four descriptions of the creation of the material universes. The foundational principle of the material world is ahankar, or false ego, a false sense of who we are. A false sense of who we are means a false sense that we exist independently and separately of Krishna. This is the essential feeling or sense of self that every conditioned soul has, that I don't have a relationship with Krishna. And therefore, the cure for that ultimately is surrender and establishing our relationship with Krishna as Krishna's servant. That's what Gotripte Varanam Tata means. That's what Sharanagati means. I'm tired. I can't act independently. I can't remain in this illusion any longer. I refuse to remain in the illusion under the false ego that I am separate from you any longer, O Lord. I am yours. I am yours. The giving of the self, of the person, to Krishna eradicates illusion, eradicates false ego, the full sense of self. And again, the full sense of self is specifically having a sense of existence that's separated from Krishna. It's not possible. It's false. It's illusory. We cannot exist separate from Krishna. It is not possible. Krishna is the param satyam, the absolute truth. The absolute truth, by definition, is all-inclusive. It includes everything. There is nothing in either existence or non-existence that exists separately from Krishna. So it is illusion, the illusory sense of existing separate from Krishna is the sense that false ego gives us. And the whole material, the entirety of material existence, everything is based on this principle of false ego, illusion. false ego combining with the mode of goodness, with the mode of passion, and the mode of ignorance. And as soon as we have false ego, there must be envy there. Because there's this illusory sense that existence is centered around me. And then we hear, or we sense naturally that it is not true, but it's centered around God, around Krishna. And there's immediately a competitor. So immediately, soon as there is false ego, or even we can say prior to false ego, there is something that causes us to fall into the material world, into material existence, and acquire this illusory identity. Prabhupada explains in one of his purports in Bhagavad Gita, it doesn't matter how we have come into this material world. Krishna knows how. It is beyond time. He doesn't say that, but this is the point. How can our finite material intelligence conceive of beyond time? Something beyond time, the limitations of time. But somehow we are here, and as soon as we have this false ego, we have enmity with Krishna. And because of envy of Krishna, that he's God, and I'm not actually the center, even though I'm trying to organize the universe around me, and he's capable of doing it, and everyone loves him, and I'm feeling so love lost in this world, and unloved and unloving, but yet I turn my back on Krishna. How much pride must be there? How much a false concept of who I am and what my capacity is to live in this illusory bubble in which I'm imagining that I am the center. That is what false ego is. This imaginary universe, illusory universe, where I'm thinking I'm the center of everything. How much pride must be there? And then with pride, so much calm, so much desire, because I'm the center and I want to enjoy. And everything in my illusion is meant for my pleasure. I have so many desires, and someone has something that I don't have, and there's always going to be people who have things that I don't have, because I'm not God, because I'm not the center. It's false ego that makes me think this inflated concept of myself. So there are always, this is the torture of being in false ego. There are always people who have things I don't have. I want everything. I'm considering, based on false ego, everything is meant for my pleasure. And other people have what I don't have, so therefore my calm, my desire is great. And therefore my anger is great too. And my greed is great. And my madness, mada and moha, and illusion, so great. These are the qualities, horrible qualities, miserable qualities, that are born of false ego. They have to be there. They have to be there as long as false ego is there. And as long as false ego is there, based on envy and pride, one cannot be with Krishna. There is an incompatibility. Now, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was examining them. The next verse, to see if they had this, because when you praise someone else in the presence of others, it will react in the heart unless one's heart is good. It react in a negative way. The next verse is very interesting and very mysterious, because there's seemingly not very much a connection. So here's this verse, Just to examine Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya and Ramananda Roy, the Lord began to praise the transcendental qualities of Rupa Goswami before them. Because Rupa Goswami, very soon, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was going to have him recite his verses from Vidagdha Madhava and Lalita Madhava, which opens up Vrindavan and the dealings between Radha and Krishna. And the envious are not allowed to participate again. So he's examining them. Here is the next verse, or the next two verses. This is the Bengali rendition of the verse that's going to follow. Ishwara Swabhave. The natural characteristics of the Ishwara, of the Lord, his nature. Bhaktera Nalai Aparad. That means, if a devotee commits an offense, this is the qualities, Ishwara Swabhav, the nature of the Lord. If a devotee commits an offense, Alpaseva, excuse me, he does not take it as an offense. This is the quality of the Lord. And Alpaseva, if someone does Alpa, a little service, Bahumane, in his mind, the Lord's mind, he accepts it as very great. And Atma Parjanta. Parjanta means he gives himself. Atma. This is the quality of Krishna. He gives himself and he gives his full mercy. He doesn't accept anything that a devotee does offensively as an offense. And if a devotee does something small in his service, he accepts it as very great. And he gives himself in reciprocation to that devotee. This is a glimpse of the heart of God. Contrast that with the heart of someone who is controlled by false ego. Envy, lust, anger, greed, illusion, excessive pride, madness, and the heart of God, the heart of Krishna. If someone does something a little bit for him, he's so grateful. He gives himself to the devotee. And if someone does something nasty or offensive to him, he doesn't take it as such. God's heart, on one hand, the conditioned soul conditioned by his false ego's heart, on the other hand, completely incompatible. And then the next verse explains it in more detail, where Kaviraj Goswami quote gives a quotation from Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, and Jiva Goswami explains that this verse, when Akura had the Shyamataka jewel in perhaps Benares, in Kashi, and it was producing so much gold, and Krishna wanted the jewel brought back to Dwarka. So he sent Uddhava. And because there was theft and killing involved, because Satyajit, the father of Satyabhauma, was killed, so Akura was very afraid of Krishna's wrath, his anger. So he was staying far away and practically hiding. But it's difficult to hide when you're producing hundreds of pounds or kilos of gold every day. So Krishna sent Uddhava with this message that describes the qualities of Krishna. Vrittasya pashyati gurun api naparadha. Same meaning practically. Of his servant, Krishna does not see any offense as great. Sevam manakapi kritam bahuda abhyupati. But if he does a little bit of service, Krishna sees that as wonderful. This is who we're being asked to surrender to. All merciful and all powerful. Avishkaroti pishunashvapi nabhyasuyam. That if you are envious of him, he doesn't reciprocate by being envious of you. Silena namalamati purushatamoyam. This is the natural qualities of our Lord. His natural characteristics. And this is why we cannot be in the realm of Braja until we attain these type of exalted qualities. There is a complete incompatibility. If I'm in Goloka Vrindavan, I'm going to be thinking me, 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 me. And then I'll see Krishna dancing. And I'll thinking, wait a second. Why are they dancing with him? Everyone knows who they should be dancing with. When you take false ego with you, you take all the qualities with you, with me, that make me incompatible with being Goloka Vrindavan. It's not Krishna who keeps us out of Vrindavan, the spiritual world. It's these abominable, selfish, self-centered, horrible qualities that separate me from actually serving Krishna. The path is therefore one, as we were speaking about yesterday, of attunement, attuning our qualities, our consciousness with the consciousness of Braja. Otherwise, there is an incompatibility. It's like someone who in an orchestra is playing so wonderfully under the leader, the orchestra, what's he called again? The maestro or the what? The conductor. And everyone is in full cooperation with him. And then there's one person who doesn't know how to play at all, playing off key completely. That was me when I tried it. And, you know, doesn't know how to do anything, won't listen to anyone. He's got his own plan for everything. He wants to be the center. But in Goloka Vrindavan, there is only one center, and that center is Krishna. And what is Krishna's mood there? He's not standing there, I am the center, I am the center, and everyone must serve me, otherwise lightning bolts and you know, pianos will fall on your head or whatever. I mentioned this little cartoon I once saw that had old man God sitting in front of the computer screen with his finger on the enter button, and he's looking at the screen, and there's this man walking down the street minding his own business in front of a big building, and above his head there's a piano being held by a rope, and God is waiting there for him to be right under the piano before he presses the enter button, you know, and the piano is going to fall on his head. That's not Krishna. The nasty old man who controls everything like that. No, this is Krishna. This is Krishna. We have to hear about Krishna. We have to hear about Krishna's dealings with his devotees. Atma parjanta vidanyata. How he, his pleasure is serving the devotees. He gives himself to his devotees. He gets more pleasure out of the chastisements from his mother. And they control his consciousness. So he becomes a little boy with tears coming from his eyes when his mother is chastising him. He gives his power to his devotees, the power over him. Because why does anyone give their power isn't exact the Why would we naturally trust someone else? Who do we trust the most? The example I always give like this. How many people in this world do we let know how much money we have? Not very many. And they did research on this point. They found that a man is more likely to talk about his intimate relationship with his wife to someone than how much money he has in his bank account. Only those who we trust the most deeply do we give control, do we allow, do we open ourselves up to completely and allow them to control us. And trust is a product of love. So when someone has proven 1,000 times, 1,000,000 times how much they love us in the most intimate way, those are the ones we trust. And therefore, we find in our devotional life there are examination after examination after examination after examination. Just when I think I'm such a good devotee now, then there's an examination, and Krishna holds up the mirror, because that's actually the purpose of an examination, an assessment. It's really self-assessment, so we can get an idea of how we are doing. We write a test, and then we get the results back. But the real, the most deep purpose of that, so we can see how we are doing. Because if we're not doing very well, we have to change something. Maybe our study habits or something. So it happens all the time that we become examined. Oh, I'm a devotee. And then a devotee means I'm interested in Krishna's welfare and what's pleasing to Krishna. And then something happens that I don't like, and suddenly the false ego erupts and a fierce demon comes out. You know, angry, lusty, illusion, mad, greedy, etc., envious. The mirror is held up if we look at it and understand this is Krishna talking to us and letting us know how far we have to go before we can actually enter into braja and serve, because we have to be attuned. We have to be completely compatible with the atmosphere there, which is no false ego. Only what rules Vrindavan? We can say who rules Vrindavan. We can say Vrindavaneshwari, Srimati, Srimati Radharani. Or we can say that Yogamaya makes all the arrangements in Vrindavan, so she rules Vrindavan. But actually, what rules Vrindavan and what inspires Yogamaya, the internal energy, to act in such a way to facilitate the pastimes of Krishna is prema, prema, prema bhakti. Love for Krishna rules Vrindavan. Love for Krishna rules Vrindavan. And based on the devotee's desire to please Krishna, Yogamaya makes the arrangements. And Krishna is continually astounded by the wonderful arrangements that Yogamaya makes in Vrindavan, based on the love of all the devotees for Krishna, who, as we heard, like the gopis, they're prepared to go to hell 1,000 times, 1,000,000 times to cure Krishna's headache. They love Krishna. It's the whole thing is about Krishna. Vrindavan is about Krishna. And of course, we can't be there unless we are also from the very core of our hearts about Krishna. If that is what is driving our engine, the engine of our thinking, feeling, willing, if it's all about what is pleasing to Krishna. And what is most pleasing to Krishna? The activities of Srimati Radharani. And therefore, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, as we'll hear about this a little, he writes, my pleasure is acting in such a way that brings Radha and Krishna together. Not Radhe Radhe Shamalade. Not, I've mentioned this before too, that I once saw this drama, a so, drama that wasn't exactly in line with Gaudiya Siddhanta. The Radha and Krishna was sitting on thrones, and the gopis were performing dramas for them, for their pleasure. And then they pleased Radha and Krishna so much, then Srimati Radharani said, whatever you want, I'll give you. And then in this drama, which isn't Dawa Siddhanta, they said to Srimati Radharani, we want Shyam, move over. No. Radha Krishna Pranaya Vakritya Ladini Shakti Asman. This is how Krishna gets his pleasure. So, the translation of that verse is the Supreme, Srila Prabhupada's translation. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is known as Purushottam, the greatest of all persons, has a pure mind. And if we want to be there, we will have to purify our consciousness. He is so gentle that even if his servant is implicated in a great offense, and again, Uddhava has spoken this verse to Akura, he is so gentle that even if his servant is implicated in a great offense, he does not take it very seriously. Indeed, if his servant renders some small service, the Lord accepts it as being great. Even if an envious person blasphemes the Lord never maintains anger against him. Such are his great, great qualities. We can measure our consciousness against the consciousness of the Lord and see that perhaps we need a little more attunement before we can serve properly and not be discordant with everything in Vrindavan. Now the next and obvious question, and we've heard about it, how do I purify my consciousness? How do I remove this envy? How do I remove this lust, anger, greed, madness, etc.? Our whole process is meant for that. And to bring us to the point of humility, and the chanting of the holy names is meant for that. But let us talk in a little detail about that. While remembering that this envy is the essence of material life, because it is the essence of false ego. And I was looking at in the 10th canto of the Bhagavatam, who knows what chapter is chapter 33? This one, many devotees will know. What chapter is 33 in the 10th canto? Oh, Chaitanya Mataji knows. You can tell her any number and she'll tell you what the chapter is. What is 33? Yes, the Rasa Dance. And what's 35? Chaitanya, 35. The gopis' feeling of separation, which is the Jugal Geet, where in 35 there's the Rasa dance. Excuse me, 33 is the Rasa dance. And 35, after the Rasa dance, when the gopis are no longer with Krishna, they're just feeling completely bereft, and they're just thinking about Krishna. And in the thinking about Krishna, actually Krishna is fully there. But yet they're just thinking about Krishna and glorifying Krishna and speaking wonderfully about Krishna. Now I'll ask a very easy question now. What chapter is between 33 and 35? Everyone knows the answer to that. 34. But 34, if you want to cross, what's in between? If you want to have this, what chapter is in between? Very interesting chapter. And I never believe that these organizational things are by chance. The chapter, there's two little stories in this chapter. If I can find it.
life will be easier, a little bit easier. Yes.
34. There is a demon. His name is? Yes, you know. There is a snake. What is a snake famous for? Envy. Is there a chance? Is it just chance that this chapter is in between the rasa dance and always thinking of Krishna? After he explains himself, this snake started eating of all people, Nanda Maharaj. And no one could stop him. And then Krishna, he touched him with his lotus feet and he became a Vidyadhara, which means an Upadevata, like a demigod. Now what quality is going to get between us dancing with Krishna or something, or participating in Krishna Leela, and remembering Krishna and feeling separation from him? Listen to what Vidyadhara explains about the qualities that were in his consciousness that caused him to be turned into a snake. "My dear Lord," he said, "in my previous life, I was named Vidyadhara." This is from Krishna book. "And I was known all over the world for my beauty. Because I was a celebrated personality, I used to travel all over in my aeroplane. And while traveling, I saw a great sage named Angira, and he was very ugly. And because I was very proud of my beauty, I laughed at him. And due to this sinful act, I was condemned by the great sage to assume the form of a serpent." Pride. Whatever we have is just a gift of Krishna. And in a second, it can be taken away. What do we have to be proud of? What does a soul who is 1/10,000th, the tip of a hair in size, have to be proud of? And then after he is kicked by the lotus feet of Krishna, he resumes his natural position. So when we get kicked, we should see it as being kicked by the lotus feet of Krishna. This is a proper way to see what's happening in the world. We should see Krishna's mercy, and for one who sees me everywhere, and sees everything in me, tasyaham sulabha, I'm easy to obtain. And we have nothing to worry about, because in this world we will get kicked. Krishna will kick us. But for what purpose? So we can watch and see how we react. Do we see Krishna's mercy? Do we become purified? Or do we become proud and more angry and more envious, etc.? More greedy, more lusty? How do we pass the examinations that Krishna gives us? And then, after Vidyadhara is sent home, then, listen to Prabhupada's words, there was a rasa dance going on in Holi. "At that time, while Krishna Balaram and the damsels were so much absorbed, almost in madness of ecstasy, a demonic associate of Kuvera, the treasury of the heavenly planets, appeared on the scene. The demon's name was Sankachuda, because on his head there was a valuable jewel resembling a conch shell, and he was very, very enamored with his opulence. And just as the two sons of Kuvera had been puffed up because of their wealth and opulence and did not care for Narada Muni's presence, this Sankachuda was also puffed up over material opulence. He thought that Krishna and Balaram were two ordinary cowherd boys enjoying the company of many beautiful girls. Generally, in the material world, a person with riches thinks that all beautiful women should be enjoyed by him. And Shankarachuda also thought that since he belonged to the rich community of Kuvera, he, not Krishna and Balaram, should enjoy the company of so many beautiful girls. And therefore, he decided to take charge of them. Why should they be dancing with Krishna? They should be dancing with me. So what is that emotion? Envy caused by pride. Pride causes envy. Envy causes pride. And the result is the same result when my consciousness is like that, based on false ego, is the same result that Shankarachuda gets. Mrityu sava. Krishna comes in the form of death. The hard fist of Krishna strikes my head in the form of death. We must become purified of all the bad qualities, but we can't do that independently of getting rid of the cause of the bad qualities, which is false ego. And false ego's cure is surrender. False ego means a sense, an illusory sense of self that's separate from Krishna. And saranagati, or surrender, means when I think of who I am, I think of myself in relationship to Krishna and Krishna's devotees as their servant. Who am I? I am Krishna's servant. I am the servant of Srila Prabhupada. I am nothing more than that. And if he wants to feed me, I eat. And if he wants to not feed me, I don't. And again, Prabhupada said, by reading Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam, the result is that we should understand that Krishna is all-powerful and all-merciful, and then we will be able to surrender to him. When we understand that these qualities, this is the gentle qualities of the Lord, he gives himself to his devotees. He doesn't become angry when we are angry at him. He doesn't accept even the offenses against him. And when we do a little service, he sees it as bahudha krita, as very, very big. He accepts leaves, tulsi, flowers, fruit that we offer to him. Silena namalapati purushottamoyam. How to remove this, these bad qualities? Ultimately, we must surrender. Some more on removing these qualities. Intellectually, we should face reality. We should know the philosophy that we are tiny and insignificant. We're here in this world for a very short time. Then 50 years, 60 years, 70 years, we'll be gone. Where will we go? Who will remember us? What will we accomplish in this world now? How much can we enjoy? We are tiny, we are insignificant. We should do something proper. We should know our situation and who we are. About envy, there is an old prescription, even in Western spirituality, that when we feel envy towards someone, we should be very kind to them. Especially kind to them. We should serve them. Another action to remove envy and that tendency. We should avoid the company and the gossip from those who are envious. Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he describes this as the, one of the qualities in Chaitanya Charitamrita of a Madhyam devotee. It's coming from the 11th canto of the Bhagavatam. And he makes it very clear that if we, that we're, that doesn't mean if people are envious in our social dealings, we'll maybe have to come across and deal with so many envious people. But that doesn't mean that we should turn our back on everyone and not talk to anyone. But it means we shouldn't open our heart and have deep spiritual discussions with those who are going to be opposed and inimical to everything that we have to say about Krishna. We should be respectful but from a distance. False ego, the cure for envy ultimately is to remove it. Surrender fully, spiritually, from the core and the heart. And in this regard, there is one lecture segment, quite short, only 6 minutes, that you have a sheet on, where Prabhupada's going to say something about this. And let's see if it comes.
Here in this material world.
Got it? Here in this material world. Yes, so here in this material world, Prabhupada's going to speak Mayapur.
Guru Maharaj is also a materialist. Brahma, what we speak of ourselves. Brahma, who is directly appointed the creator of this universe by the grace of God. Why he is in this material world? Because he has got some desire that I shall be the master of a Brahmanda. Just like everyone is trying to become the master of his house, or the society, or the community, or the country. Just like in your country, so many people are trying to become the president, everywhere. Everyone is trying to become master. It doesn't matter, it is a small circle or big circle. This is material business. So Brahma is also trying to become the master of this universe. The same mentality is there. Hiranyakashipu underwent severe penances, why? To become the master of the world. This is material business. Krishna Bhuriya Ji Bhogavancha. So these Bhogavancha are different degrees. So one man is satisfied having a family, 3-4 men, she thinks I am with a house. But other is not satisfied. Other wants plural, why family? I was the master of a society, or a community, or a nation. So Brahma is also the same thing, same degree, not same degree, different degree. But the is how to become master. That disease is there. We are trying to be disease is disease. Some of you have seen that one by Dr. Lord. I have said many times that when you are a student, so one professor, he in those days medical professor for Englishman, he said in the class that in our country 75% of the students they are infected with syphilis. So this doctor, he was a student. He said in the class, oh, Hollywood. So that professor said, why you are saying Hollywood? In your country, 80%, 90%, they are infected with malaria. And they are in syphilis. So what is the difference? Why you make, as a medical man, why should you make defiance that this disease is better than that disease? Disease is this. Actually, that is fact. you say that you are suffering from malaria, it is better than to suffer from syphilis. No. Disease is disease. Similarly, either Brahma or the ant, the disease is how to become master. This is the disease. So to cure this disease, to say plainly that, girl, you are not master, you are servant, surrenderer. This is the cure of this. If one agrees, then no more, no more trying for becoming master. That is the cure of this. Therefore, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says, as Prahlad Maharaj says, Nijabhritta Partham, engage me as the servant of your servant. The same thing Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says, Gopi Bhaktup Padakamalayo Dasa Dasanuda. The Krishna consciousness movement means we have to give up this nonsense idea of becoming master. This is Krishna consciousness. We have to learn how to become servant, not only servant. That is, therefore Prahlad Maharaj said, I have understood all this nonsense of becoming master. My father also tried to become master. So this knowledge now I have. There is no use of becoming master. Better, if you kindly want to give me some benediction, kindly make me the servant of your servant. So one who has learned to become the servant of Krishna's servant is perfect. Therefore, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says, Tinadubi Suni Chena, Karolobi Sarishkuna. The servant has to tolerate. Servant sometimes master orders so many things, he becomes disturbed, but still he has to execute and tolerate. That is perfection. This is called passion.
So that, again, that lecture was in relationship to how to remove the false ego. We have to surrender and become, give up the master consciousness. False ego means master. Prabhupada has a very strong way of saying things, doesn't he? But to the point. Another from Prabhupada also. We have to be prayerful. This is Prabhupada's purport to Anadi Karma Fall Verse song. This is a song sung by Bhaktivinoda Thakur depicting the conditioned soul. Bhaktivinoda Thakur is presenting himself as an ordinary human being, saying, due to my past fruit of actions, I have now fallen into this great ocean of nescience, and I do not find any means of coming out of the great ocean. It is just like an ocean of poison. If one takes some pungent food, it burns the heart. Similarly, although we are trying to be happy by sense enjoyment, actually our situation becomes just the opposite, causing our hearts to burn. And that burning goes on day and night, 24 hours a day. And on account of this, my mind is not at all satisfied. I am always making hundreds and thousands of plans to become happy, but actually all of these plans give me pain, 24 hours a day. My position is exactly like one who is being dashed again and again by the waves of the ocean. Beside that, there are so many thieves and rogues, especially, they are six in number, namely, lust, anger, greed, envy, illusion, and madness. They are always present, and I am afraid of them. In this way, my life is becoming advanced. Or in other words, I'm coming to the point of the end of my life. Although this is my position, still two kinds of activities, my tendency to perform two kinds of activities, cheat me. To remove the pain, what I do is mental speculation, engage in jnana, and karma, fruit of activities. After misleading me, they bring me to the seashore and push me down into the ocean. Under the circumstance, and here comes the point that I wish to make, when we become aware of our actual position, precarious, we adopt the mood that Prabhupada will now describe. Under the circumstance, my dear Krishna, who is very gentle and very kind, you are my only friend, and you are an ocean of mercy. I have no strength to get out of this ocean of nescience, so I pray unto your lotus feet that by your strength kindly pick me up. After all, I am your eternal servant, and somehow or other I have fallen into this ocean. So kindly pick me up and fix me as one of the particles of dust at your lotus feet. Bhaktivinoda Thakur entreats, kindly give me shelter at your lotus feet. I am your eternal servant. Somehow or another I have forgotten you, and now I have fallen into this network of Maya. My dear Lord, I have become entangled in this way. Kindly save me. So prayerfully approaching, revealing, as that was maybe a Bodha Dainika or Dainya Bodhika type of a prayer. Now here's something that a very interesting purport from our BBT Bhagavatam, which is mostly taken from Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. This, I found something essential for me in this. This is when Krishna is just about to take his birth. Krishna is just about to take his birth. And then before Krishna is born, as the eighth son of Devaki, then before Balaram is born. Within the womb of Devaki is my partial expansion known as Shankarshan or Shesha. Without difficulty, O Yogamaya, transfer him into the womb of Rohini. Please listen. A pure devotee is always transcendentally situated because he's always executing the nine processes of devotional service. Although he's situated in devotional service, a devotee, although in the material world, is not in the material world. Yet, he is always afraid, thinking, because I'm associated with the material world, so many contaminations affect me. Therefore, he is always alert in fear, which gradually diminishes his material association. Symbolically, Mother Devaki's constant fear of Kamsa was purifying her. A pure devotee should always fear material association. And in this way, all the asuras of material association will be killed, as the sadgarbhas, the embryos, were killed by Kamsa. It is said that from the mind, Marichi appeared. In other words, Marichi is an incarnation of the mind. Marichi had six sons: Kam, Krod, Lobh, Moha, Mada, and Matsarya, lust, anger, greed, illusion, madness, and envy. The Supreme Personality of Godhead appears in devotional service. We can't have our consciousness filled with these items. So when a pure devotee fears material association, knowing the results that happen in my heart when I interact materially, plays, get seduced by the material energy, get seduced by false ego, try to enjoy the material world in one way or another. A devotee always fears this, and then his real position of bhakti is manifest, and he naturally becomes uninterested in material enjoyment. And when the six sons of Marici, that's lust, anger, greed, etc., killed by such fear, and one is freed from material contamination, then, within the womb of bhakti, then the Supreme Personality of Godhead appears. When the consciousness is clean and pure, free from the impurities of this, then the Dham, Balaram's potency, Sandini's Shakti, descends into the heart. And then the heart is a suitable place for Sri Sri Radha and Krishna to have their pastimes. So the point here was on fear, that we should fear the results of material contamination. Atta eva maya tare samsareda duk. So much pain we cause ourselves in this way. So we were up to the point when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was coming and he was testing Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya and Ramananda Roy. For what? For envy. For false ego. For pride. For lust, anger and greed, etc. and illusion and madness that come along with these qualities. And when Haridas Thakur and Rupa Goswami saw Chaitanya Mahaprabhu had come with his intimate devotees, and this is his intimate devotees, they both immediately fell down dandavats and offered prayers to their lotus feet. Not only to his lotus feet, to their lotus feet. Thus Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and his personal devotees met Rupa Goswami and Haridas Thakur. The Lord then sat down in an elevated place with his devotees. Rupa Goswami and Haridas Thakur sat at the foot at the elevated place where Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was sitting. And although everyone asked them to sit on the same level as the Lord and his associates, they did not do so. We should watch these dealings. They are wonderful. And again, Haridas Thakur and Rupa were not imitating. They knew what you're supposed to do, so everyone will think that you're humble. Because Mahaprabhu knew his mind. He accepted their dealings because they were humble. They considered themselves only the property of Mahaprabhu. And then, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu ordered Rupa Goswami to read the verse that they had previously heard, that Tandai Tandavali, no, Priyosyam. And Rupa Goswami was very shy, lajja, and he did not read it. He remained silent. Then Srup Damodara Goswami recited the verse, and when the devotees heard it, their minds were struck with wonder. Priyosyam?
Priyasyam Krishna.
The last line again. Mano me.
Mano me.
My dear friend, now I have met my very old dear friend Krishna on this field of Kurukshetra. I am the same Radharani, and now we are meeting together. It is very pleasant, but still I would like to go to the bank of the Jamuna, beneath the trees of the forest there. I wish to hear the vibration of his sweet flute playing the fifth note within that forest of Vrindavan. After hearing this verse, both Ramananda Roy and Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya said to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, "Well, it's sort of nice, but there may be some faults in it. You want to hear another verse that I wrote that may be more pleasing?" No. They immediately recognized the potency that this verse had, written by Rupa Goswami, and they said, "Without your special mercy, how could Rupa Goswami have understood your mind?" Sri Ramananda Roy admitted that previously Chaitanya Mahaprabhu had empowered his heart so that he could express elevated and conclusive statements that even Lord Brahma had no access to. And what is that conversation called? Everyone knows the conversation between Mahaprabhu and Ramananda Roy. Everyone is shy now. But we're hearing that in the morning. Ramananda Sambhat. So he's empowered and they're recognizing it. And Ramananda Roy is recognizing that feeling of Mahaprabhu working through you. And this is the happiness of a devotee. Every devotee wants to be instrumental. That's what it means to be a devotee. How can I serve you? Use me in your service. Had you not previously bestowed your mercy on him, they said, it would not have been possible for him to express your internal feelings. Now there's a very important purport here that we will read another time, but very important purport by Prabhupada. Thus Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, "My dear Rupa Goswami, Rupa, please recite that verse from your drama, which, upon being heard, makes all people's unhappiness and lamentation go far away." When the Lord persisted again and again in asking Rupa, he recited the Tunda Tundavani verse. This verse, we enter deeply and it makes all unhappiness go away. And lamentation. I do not know how much nectar the two syllables Krishna have produced. When the holy name of Krishna is chanted, it appears to dance within the mouth. We then desire many, many millions of mouths. When that name enters the holes of the ears, we desire many millions of ears. And when the holy name dances independently by its own free will in the courtyard of the heart, it conquers the activities of the mind and all the senses become inert. And when all the devotees of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, especially Sri Ramananda Roy, because Ramananda Roy was such an accomplished poet himself and a writer of dramatic literature himself, all the devotees, especially Ramananda Roy, they were filled with transcendental bliss. They were struck with wonder. They had no envy in their hearts whatsoever. They were fully qualified. They were fully qualified to enter into the pastimes that Rupa Goswami is going to describe. And everyone admitted that although they had heard many statements glorifying the holy name of the Lord, they had never heard such sweet descriptions as those as Rupa Goswami. Then Ramananda Roy inquired, "What kind of drama are you writing? We can understand that it must be a mine of conclusive truth, Siddhanta Kani. All Siddhantas must be in there. And the dramas are Lalita Madhava and Vidagdha Madhava, which talk about the pastimes of Radha and Krishna in Vrindavan and in Dwarka." Sarup Damodara replied for Rupa Goswami. He wanted to compose a drama about the pastimes of Krishna. He planned to describe in one book both the pastimes of Vrindavan and Dwarka and Mathura. He began in that way, but now, following the order of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he is dividing it in two and writing two plays, one concerning the pastimes of Mathura and Dwarka, and the others concerning the pastimes of Vrindavan. The two plays are called Vidagdha Madhava and Lalita Madhava. Both of them wonderfully describe ecstatic bhava, ecstatic emotional love of the Lord. Interesting that Srila Bhakti Prabhupada quotes Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur saying that this discussion took place in our calendar 1437, and Vidagdha Madhava was completed 17 years later, in 1454. So it took him 17 years to write this perfect drama. And Lalita Madhava, 5 years after that. That means 22 years later, he completed this book. How perfect. He composed it in his mind and wrote things down and edited it a bit. But most of the composition, how perfect and clear their minds were. Ramananda Roy said, "Please recite the introductory verse of Vidagdha Madhava so that I can hear and examine it." He's also going, everyone is examining the Srila Rupa Goswami being ordered by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu recited the verse. So here is the introductory verse of Vidagdha Madhava. It is sweet, it is wonderful, it is deep, it is meaningful. Please listen, and it is very instructive for the path of Rupa. Sudanam.
Sudhanam Chandrinam Atimadimam Parvamani Radhana Radhade Pranaya Bhagavadhe
One more time, please. Wait, oh, actually, what I'll do is I'll go over it, and then we'll hear it one more time. Sudanam means of the nectar. Nectar. Chandrinam, Sudanam, Chandrinam. Nectar produced on the moon. Api, Madhurima, the sweetness. Unmara Damani, overpowering the pride, the Dani distributing. So the first line means something, it's not described yet, overpowers the sweetest nectar that is produced on the moon, overpowers and defeats it. Now, what is this wonderful thing? Radha Adi Pranaya Ghana Sharai Surabhitam. The sweet fragrance of the loving dealings, the pastimes of Radha Ghana, Radha and her group, overpower the sweet nectar of the Chandra Sunanam on the moon that is produced on the moon. Pranaya Gana, the concentrated loving affairs. Samantan, everywhere satampa, santapa, miserable conditions, Ugama, Vishma, very dangerous, Samsara Sarani. Pranitam, that this material world, by samsara, just being in this world, it must produce miserable and dangerous conditions. Te trishnam harato harilila sikarini sikarini. So, the first line of the verse talks about the sweetness of Krishna's pastimes. Why are they sweet? Because they describe the sweetest of all things, the dealings between Radha and Krishna. And what is the result? And then he describes in the third line the material world. It is miserable, in a word. It is miserable. It must be miserable. The false ego continues to think, oh, I have my plan, and if I succeed in this, so much pleasure is going to come, but it's false promises. The nature, dukkhalayam ashashvatam, the very nature of the material world is misery. It's temporary. Everything must be crushed. But the pastimes of Krishna and Radharani and Vrindavan are so sweet. They defeat the nectar produced on the moon, contrasting it to the material world, which ultimately means death. And then the fourth line describes the result. And that line is... the third line. That let the pastimes of Krishna and the minds concentrating on this sweet nectarian pastimes of Krishna, let that reduce all the miseries of the material world and remove all unwanted desires, all anartas from the heart. So Rupa Goswami has composed his Vidagdha Madhava talking, and this is his introduction to it. Let these sweet pastimes of Krishna enter your ear and remove all the misery. Remove all the products that sit in our heart caused by our false ego. Let them sweep them away. And let them establish us in the real desire to serve with great prema, with great love, engaged in the service of Sri Vrindavan Dham. So please recite the verse again, and then I'll read the English translation of Prabhupada. May the pastimes of Sri Krishna reduce the miseries existing in the material world. And may they nullify, remove all material desires. How can they do that? The pastimes of the Supreme Personality of Godhead are like shikarini, a blend of yogurt and sugar candy. They overpower the pride of even the nectar produced on the moon, for they distribute the sweet fragrance of the concentrated loving affairs of Radha and Krishna, of Radharani and the gopis. On the path, we have heard about humility is being required, how surrender is being required. And here, the pastimes of Krishna, the Srimad Bhagavatam, is required. And the sweetness of the Bhagavatam, Bhagavad Katha, Krishna Katha, will push away all these unwanted desires caused by false ego. That is the essential point on the path. I wanted to read some glorifications of the Bhagavatam now, because it is so important and it's mentioned here. And then tomorrow we will begin when Ramananda Roy is going to ask who your worshipable deity is. And that's going to be Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and he's very shy and doesn't want to say it. So he's going to recite a wonderful verse, the Nanarpitam Chiracharat verse. And in that verse, thinking of this chapter as a description of the path of Sri Rupa and all the elements needed, that verse, the mercy of Chaitanya, the mercy of Nittai, is going to make up for all our lacks in following the contaminations in the heart. We need mercy. We're going to need mercy. But please listen, we won't get too far ahead. We'll begin with that tomorrow. But listen to the glories, some of the glories of the Bhagavatam, because Prabhupada spent so much of his time. This was he wouldn't come to the United States to begin the Krishna consciousness movement until he had the Bhagavatam with him. He took his most cherished time of the day when he was alone to translate the Bhagavatam. And I personally heard him say, don't think that it is an export business, that these books are for others, not for us. Why are we so interested in distribution of the Bhagavatam? Because it is distribution of knowledge. What knowledge? Knowledge that leads us to Braja. The highest knowledge, the most complete knowledge. Spiritual knowledge that has potency. It's not abstract. It's none different from Krishna, the Bhagavatam Puranako Dunoditaha. It is Krishna himself. So here, in this very sweet verse, where the cantos of the Bhagavatam lead to the smiling face of Krishna and his most wonderful, all sweet pastimes in Braja, is so important. Some glorification of the Bhagavatam. Amidst the papers. Why don't we first recite Sanatana Goswami's? I didn't warn you about this, but you know it, yes? From Krishna Lila Stava, Sava Shastra Vipiyusha. No, it's not there. Do you remember it? The one we sing every day at the beginning of our Bhagavatam. I'll help you. Okay. Please, while we're reciting this, please enter into the mood of Sanatana Goswami, who's also empowered by Krishna, by Mahaprabhu. Enter not just his words, but his actual feelings for the Bhagavatam. So we'll do it, you sing it, and then verse by verse, we'll do it that way. Okay, we'll do it that way, it'll be quicker. Okay. The first two verses together.
Sarva-shastra vipriyusha Sarva-vaidaika-sarphala Sarva-siddhanta-vatmarya Sarva-lokaika-vrithvada Sarva-bhagavata-prana Śrīmad-Bhāgavata-prabhu Kali-gantarita-ritya Śrī-kṛṣṇa-parivartita
O Śrīmad-Bhāgavatam, O nectar churned from the ocean of all the Vedic scriptures, O most prominent transcendental fruit of all the Vedas, O you who are enriched with the jewels of all spiritual philosophical conclusions, O you who grant spiritual vision to all the people of the world, O life breath of the Vaishnava devotees, O Lord, you are the sun which has arisen to dispel the darkness of Kali Yuga. You are actually Lord Krishna, who has returned among us. O Srimad Bhagavatam, I offer respectful obeisances unto you. By reading you, one attains transcendental bliss, for your syllables rain pure love of God upon the reader. You are always to be served by everyone, for you are an incarnation of Krishna.
Madhe prabandho mat sanghe mat guru mannahara man nishtarak mat bhagya madananda namaste.
O Srimad Bhagavatam, O my only friend, O my companion, O my teacher, O my great wealth, O my deliverer, O my good fortune, O my bliss, I offer my respectful obeisances unto you. O Srimad Bhagavatam, O giver of saintliness to the unsaintly, O uplifter of the very fallen, please do not ever leave me. Please become manifested in my heart and my throat, accompanied by pure love of Krishna. And to end, I made a partial list of the false shrutis from Srimad Bhagavatam, just to give us an idea of what the Bhagavatam can benedict us with. And it's not a complete list at all. Please listen, though. The subject of the departure of the son of Pandu for the ultimate goal of life back to Godhead is fully auspicious and perfectly pure. Anyone who hears this narration with devotional faith certainly gains the devotional service of the Lord, the highest perfection of life. Third canto. Anyone in this entire world, even down to the chandala, who lives by cooking and eating the flesh of a dog, is immediately purified if he takes bath in hearing through the ear the glorification of my name, fame, etc., Krishna's name. Now you have realized me without doubt, and therefore I will not hesitate to lop off my own arm if its conduct is found hostile to you. The Lord is speaking to the Kumaras. O Brahmanas, anyone who hears, chants, or takes pleasure in the wonderful narrations of the killing of the Hiranyaka demon by the Lord, who appeared as the first boar in order to deliver the world, is at once relieved of the results of sinful activities, even the killing of a Brahmin. Anyone who meditates upon me with faith and affection, who hears and chants about me, surely goes back home, back to Godhead. This description of the dealings of Kapila Muni and his mother is very confidential, and anyone who hears or reads this narration becomes a devotee of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is carried by Garuda, and therefore he enters into the abode of the Supreme Lord to engage in his transcendental loving service. Anyone who hears about the dynasties of Manu will be relieved from all sinful reactions. Anyone who hears the narration of Dhruva Maharaj and who repeatedly tries with faith and devotion to understand his pure character, attains the pure devotional platform and executes pure devotional service. By such activities, one can diminish his misery. Anyone who hears this narration of Dhruva acquires exalted qualities. And anyone who desires greatness, prowess, or influence, here is the process by which to acquire them. And for the thoughtful men who want adoration, here is the proper means. It does not matter whether one is a man or a woman. Anyone who with great respects hears the narration of Maharaj Prithu will become the father of many children. If he is without children, and he will become the richest man if he was without money. Even if he be distressed or degraded, any person who chants the holy name of the Lord, having heard it from a bona fide spiritual master, is immediately purified. Even if he chants the Lord's name jokingly or by chance, he and anyone who hears him are freed from sins. Therefore, how can anyone seeking disentanglement from the material clutches avoid chanting the names of the Lord? Of who else should one take shelter? Although I was born in a demoniac family, Prahlad says, I may without a doubt offer prayers to the Lord with full endeavor as far as my intelligence allows. Anyone who has been forced by ignorance to enter the material world may be purified of material life if he offers prayers to the Lord or hears his glories. Anyone who hears about Prahlad Maharaj and Lord Nrisimhadev surely reaches the spiritual world where there is no anxiety. Anyone who hears about King Satyavrata and the Matsya incarnation is delivered from all reactions to his sinful activities. Anyone who chants the narration about Ambarish Maharaj certainly becomes a pure devotee of the Lord. Anyone who hears the narration concerning the character of Lord Ramachandra's pastimes becomes freed from the disease of envy, and thus becomes liberated from the bondage of fruitive activities. Any person who hears with faith and devotion how Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, killed Putana, and who thus invests his hearing with the childhood pastimes of Krishna, attains attachment for Govinda, the original Supreme Person. All the varieties, the various activities exhibited by the incarnations of the Supreme Personality of Godhead are pleasing to the ear and to the mind. And simply by hearing of Krishna's activities, the dirty things in one's mind immediately vanish. Generally, we are reluctant to hear about the activities of the Lord. But Krishna's childhood activities are so attractive, they are automatically pleasing to the mind and ear. Thus one's attachment for hearing about material things, which is the root cause of material existence, vanishes, and one develops devotional service for the Lord, attachment for Him, friendship with devotees. If you think it fit, kindly speak about those activities of the Lord from the 10th cantos. Anyone who faithfully hears or describes the Lord's playful affairs with the young gopis of Vrindavan will attain the Lord's pure devotional service. He will quickly become sober. He will conquer lust, which is the disease of the heart. The narration of the Shaimataka jewel is rich with descriptions of the power of Lord Vishnu, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. It removes sinful reactions. It bestows auspiciousness. Anyone who recites it, hears it, remembers it, it will drive away his own infamy from sins, and he will attain peace. Lord Hari is the ultimate cause of the universal creation, maintenance, and destruction. My dear King, anyone who chants about, hears about, or simply appreciates the extraordinary activities that Krishna performed in this world, which are impossible to imitate, will surely develop devotion for the Supreme Lord. Krishna is now the ruler of the Bhojas, the Vrishnis, the Andakas, and he is staying in Dwarka. Since he gives even his own self to anyone who simply remembers his lotus feet, please take a moment and remember the lotus feet of Krishna. Krishna gives his own self to such a devotee. What doubt is there that he, who is the spiritual master of the universe, will bestow upon his sincere worshipper prosperity and material enjoyment, which are not even desirable? A few more. The Lord always shows brahmanas special favor, and anyone who hears this account of the Supreme Lord's kindness to Sudama Brahmana will come to develop love for the Lord and thus become freed from all fruitive reactions. The pastimes enacted by Lord Murari, whose fame is eternal, totally destroys the sins of the universe, and it serves as an ornament for the devotee's ears. And anyone who carefully hears this pastime as recounted by the son of Vyas will be able to fix his mind on the meditation of the Supreme Lord and attain to his all-auspicious kingdom. There's too many. In the 85th chapter, Chaitanya, 85th chapter, Shrutadev Bahulasva. Yes, Krishna's instructions to Vyasadeva and Kurukshetra. I'll just read the last one. There's more, but it's already late and everyone's tired and you've already been so attentive and I'm testing your ability to listen to readings. Srimad Bhagavatam is the spotless Purana. It is most dear to the Vaishnavas because it describes the pure and supreme knowledge of the Paramhansas. This Bhagavatam reveals the means to become free from all material work together with the process of transcendental knowledge, renunciation, and devotion. Anyone who tries seriously to understand Srimad Bhagavatam, who properly hears it and chants it with devotion, becomes completely free from this material world. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai. Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita ki jai. This wonderful verse by Rupa Goswami Kijay, this is the first verse of his Vidagdha Madhava, brings us to the pastimes of Krishna. And the holy names Kijay, Srila Rupa Goswami Kijay, Haridas Thakur Kijay, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu Kijay, Sri Gaur Bhaktivinoda Kijay, Sri Giriraj Maharaj Kijay, Sri Vrindavan Dam Kijay.